Welcome to Season 10 of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. I'm your host, Amy Wheeler. This is going to be a very special Season 10. We are going to be focusing on the eight limbs of yoga and how each of these eight limbs helps to regulate our nervous system. As we go through each of the eight limbs, we will have guests and materials that will help you tie together the ancient traditions of yoga with modern neuroscience and psychology. In the beginning of Season 10, we'll start by laying the foundation of yoga as self-regulation. Then we'll move into a yogic map of the mind and how to understand the chitta field of the mind as it relates to modern science. Then we'll be working into the concept of chitta vritti nirodha, one pointed focus. What does this really mean, and how can it help to regulate our autonomic nervous system? Next, we'll be going into the benefits of regular practice and how it is that we can understand in an embodied way how to let go. We'll get into the kleshas, the five causes of suffering, and emotional imprints, things like samskaras and vasanas. We'll get into the eight limbs of yoga, the entire ladder of self-reflection, self-awareness, self-actualization. We'll have a whole month on the yamas, or the social disciplines of yoga, kind of the foundation. We'll have a whole nother month on the niyamas. What are the personal disciplines that you do to take care of your own mind and body? We'll have almost a month full of episodes on postures and interoceptive awareness, pranayama and vagal tone, pratyahara, and how to work with drawing your senses inward so you don't have sensory overwhelm. We'll talk about concentration, we'll talk about flow states, and we'll talk about total absorption. So this is what we have planned for Season 10 of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I think you're really going to enjoy it. The content is going to be very deep, and it will almost be like a little lesson each time that you listen to the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. So welcome to Season 10. We're so glad you're here, and let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back to the Yoga Therapy Hour. And I'd just like to use this episode to kind of give you a framework of what's going to happen for this entire season. I am so excited about it. This year, we're going to look at how does the eight limbs of yoga help us to regulate our autonomic nervous system? So why are we doing this? Why do we want to spend an entire season on this? And I think it's because the autonomic nervous system is something that yoga people understand, but it's also something that integrative healthcare people understand, allied healthcare people understand, that it's the nervous system that can affect the cardiovascular system, the endocrine system, the immune system, all the different systems of the body. So when we are able to help regulate the nervous system, we have this holistic way that we can help people with their mental and physical health. So as we begin to go through each of the eight limbs, I want to be sure that we're all on the same page, that this is a system of integrated living. If we look at the eight limbs of yoga, which come from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, I always say the Patanjali Yoga Sutra book is a guidebook for living, especially chapter one and chapter two. We can get so much great information about how to live a sustainable life that we can stay in balance, but also live in an ethical way in connection with others. It's not all just about me taking care of me. It's how am I showing up in the world to be present to other people and to do good in the world? And that's the whole goal of having a regulated nervous system. It's not a selfish thing. It's something that we can all strive for, because it helps us bring our best self to the world and fulfill our life purpose or our dharma. Another thing that I really think is so important about bringing the eight limbs into connection with autonomic nervous system regulation is that this is the key from our lens, yoga therapy, This is the key to help people with chronic stress, with burnout, with looking at their lives and making sense of what has happened to us in our lives, and also many different health complexities like chronic pain that doesn't just affect one system of the body. So we need a more systemic, holistic approach. So what this approach is talking about is helping people to regulate and to get themselves mentally and physically into a balanced place so that we can then optimize whatever it is that we're here to do in the world, whether that's be the best mom you can be, or whether you're a lawyer, a doctor, yoga teacher, you know, whatever it is that you love doing in the world, a fitness professional, a teacher, clinician, showing up with regulated nervous system is going to help you do whatever you do and do it well. So one thing that I'd like to say about the nervous system, and I work for many organizations, I see what's out there with the autonomic nervous system these days, and I just want to make sure that we are reframing this discussion to move beyond nervous system techniques. Not that those aren't useful, not that they can't help us come into balance when we're in sympathetic overload or dorsal vagal collapse. You know, it's not that we don't need techniques, but I want to expand this discussion beyond the techniques. It's not just a set of tools for your dysregulated nervous system. I want you to think of the eight limbs as a regulatory framework. And here's the big part that I want you to get. These eight limbs help you live your life in a very different way, slowing down, having simplicity, living your life in a way that you feel good more of the time. Because this regulatory framework of the eight limbs of yoga that Patanjali laid out for us, it shapes your perception. And by that, I mean what's coming in through your eyes, your ears, your taste, your smell, your sense, and even how your mind perceives conversations, how your mind perceives you and your own ego identity, how your mind perceives others in your life and how they're showing up. That when you're dysregulated, your perception gets shifted. And when you come back into a more regulated state, hopefully your perception becomes more clear and matches the truth or the reality that is more objective, right? That's really what we're looking for, is to have clarity, or viveka, as Patanjali would say, so that my version of reality is not so biased, it's not so self-serving, that I can actually look at the world as it is instead of how I want it to be. This regulatory framework, these eight limbs, also impact your behavior, how you communicate, how you hear, how you speak, the actions you decide to take, how quickly you decide to take these actions. Are these actions and behaviors in alignment, not only with your personal dharma, but also the world and all of society and the universe? Are they in alignment with benevolence and goodness, or are they more self-serving? So this regulatory framework that we're going to be discussing for the whole season 10 of this podcast is talking about choice and the behaviors you are choosing and the way that you and I are choosing to show up in the world. Another really important thing about kind of getting away from tools and tricks and techniques for the nervous system and moving towards a more regulatory framework is that we can actually impact our physiology over time. We can bring down blood pressure or bring it up if we need to. We can literally change the physiology of your body. And of course, that is going to impact your behavior, your communication, your perception, and all that we've talked about. So as we go on this journey together on season 10, and I hope you'll be with us for the whole journey, I want you to start thinking about the difference between yoga as your personal practice that helps you stay regulated versus a therapeutic yoga application within integrative health contexts. So that's really what the Yoga Therapy Hour wants to do. It wants to support everyone in their personal private practice. But the larger message and the larger meaning of this podcast is to help integrative healthcare practitioners understand what yoga can do as a regulatory framework, but also help you as a yoga teacher or a yoga therapist start to figure out, ooh, this is how I might be able to fit within integrative health contexts. The future of yoga therapy and therapeutic yoga within integrative health depends on each and every one of you going out there and wiggling your way in. I'm not sure we're going to be able to do it from a top-down hierarchy. We've been trying to do that for 15 or 20 years. We haven't gotten very far, unfortunately, and it's nobody's fault. But you, as a practitioner, and eventually as someone who shows up to bring yoga into these integrative health contexts, you need to have some really clear ideas about this eight-limb path, this regulatory framework that we're talking about. Now, one thing I'm really excited about is that this podcast for the next year, we're going to do this for a whole year, is going to line up with a book that I've written with Marlisa Sullivan. Some of you know Marlisa, and the current title of the book is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. And we go step by step to show people how this regulatory framework can be implemented into integrative health. So as you're listening to these podcasts, I hope that by the summer of 2026, this book will also be out as kind of a companion guide to help you really see clearly where you personally might be able to make a difference and bring yoga and yoga therapy into healthcare. So really, there's a big arc here from personal to professional. And I'm just trying to do my little part in helping us figure out how do we get into behavioral health? How do we get into health education? How do we get into surgical preparation? How do we get into research studies to help people understand this regulatory framework for the nervous system and how impactful it is on all the other systems of the body, both mentally and physically. So one of the first things that I want to make sure we are all clear about is that this idea of the nervous system and the eight limbs of yoga as a regulatory framework, that's the through line that we can all lean into, that the nervous system has already been defined. People already know about the nervous system. We can just hop on this train. So you personally are going to need to learn how to define the nervous system in accessible language and to help them understand through storytelling, through not too much cognitive, but more teaching people how to just say it really easily. For example, it's like a stoplight. There's a green light for go, there's a red light for stop, there's a yellow light for yield, and use that stoplight metaphor that people already understand applied to the nervous system. So one of your first jobs, and as you listen throughout this entire season, just start thinking about, oh, that's a phrase I could use. And I do this all the time when I'm listening to other lectures. If I hear a phrase that kind of helps me define a complex issue in a very accessible way, I just write it down in my little notebook and I put somebody's name by it so I remember, okay, that's where this came from. So always give people credit, of course, if they think of a great metaphor that you can use. And then how can you also explain in a kind of a non-clinical way, in a very accessible way, how nervous system regulation shows up for the common person across health domains? Do people have more emotional steadiness? Do they have more cognitive clarity? Are they sleeping better? Are they digesting better? Are they able to have a bowel movement every day? I mean, that's as practical as it gets. Is the immune system functioning well? Are we getting sick less often or less intense? Other ways that regulation shows up across healthcare domains are things like capacity for being in relationship to one another. How do we speak? How do we listen? How do we hear? How do we communicate? And then also ethical decision-making. If you're a leader, if you're someone who is kind of setting the tone, well, are your decisions coming from a place of ethics or are they coming from a place of panic, fear, or needing to make money? And it's not that we don't need to be sustainable, but even in those instances, we still need to come from a place of ethics, which thankfully the eight limbs has built right in as the foundation. So I want to make sure that we're not just talking about, okay, I'm going to give you a bunch of tips and tools to hack your nervous system, right? First of all, people don't like that word hacking. It has imagery that is like, oh, that's scary. So, you know, we have to find other words that kind of soothe people, calm them, make them feel safe and stable and secure. Because this whole thing, this whole eight-limb regulatory framework is about creating conditions for safety, stability, sustainability, also creating the conditions where we can be adaptable and flexible, and where we can start to find a way to live more in what we call coherence, meaning that we have a manageable life and our resources, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, and financially, can actually meet the needs of our life, and the two of them can kind of line up together. And, you know, from my experience as a yoga therapist, when I'm helping someone create more coherence in their life, a deconstruction or a dismantling often has to happen for them before the reconstruction can begin. And in my experience, that takes about 2 to 3 years, because letting go and deconstructing is way harder for people than adding more on top. And as we all know, when we keep adding, it becomes very unsustainable. So creating these conditions internally and externally to sustain us, to keep us adaptable, flexible, and coherent. And that's what the eight limbs of yoga and this Patanjali's Yoga Sutra guidebook for daily living, that's what it's doing for us. It's talking to us directly. It's an applied science. It's not some philosophy up there on a shelf. It's literally saying, hey, we have the map here. How are we going to follow this? So when we talk about these eight limbs of yoga, so many people just kind of listing them off: yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyanam, samadhi, right? It's just kind of like a checklist. Check, check, check. I don't actually want to think of it that way. I want to think of the eight limbs not as a hierarchy where we're moving from lowest to highest. Like, oh, you start with your social disciplines, then you learn how to take care of yourself, then you do movement, then you learn breath work, then you learn how to concentrate and withdraw your senses, and then finally you get to different levels of meditation. Like, that's more of a hierarchical approach. I would like us to think of the eight limbs of yoga as more of a regulatory circle, right? Just imagine a circle, and that each of these eight limbs is like an entry point or a little door that opens up into the circle, and that all of these eight limbs or eight doors are interrelated entry points, so that once you get inside the circle, you can see all the other doors and start to use all the other tools, if you will, or the other limbs, if you will. So when we look at this regulatory framework and how each limb is influencing regulation, just remember that although you may enter in through the breathwork door to the circle, remember there's a circle with eight doors, once you get into the middle of the circle, that breathwork doesn't just impact your physiology, it impacts your mind, it impacts your communication, it impacts your perception. It impacts the way you show up in the world, your behavior. So once you're in the circle, you're in and you have access to all the other limbs, but you also are impacting many different systems of your body simultaneously. So when we look at this kind of very brief preview of the circle with the eight doors that we can come in, each of the eight limbs, they're not hierarchical. Some people do better entering in through meditation for whatever reason. Other people do better entering in through movement and postures. Other people do better entering in through how they show up socially in the world. And it should also be noted that every single one of us has trouble with some of the doors too. They're not easy to enter in through. They're very challenging for us. We might be really good at withdrawing the senses and being an introvert and going inside of ourselves and connecting deeply, but maybe we have a lot of trouble socially, right? So we all have strengths, we all have weaknesses, but we can enter into the circle of regulation through any of these eight doors and bring our nervous systems to a more stable, consistent place. Let's take just a little pause and talk about something that's really exciting. I teach at the University of Minnesota. There is something called the Bakken Center for Spirituality and Healing, and we are doing some groundbreaking work over there. We offer these classes 3 times per year, once in April, a 4-week session, also in July, a 4-week session, and again in October, another 4-week session. These classes offer an opportunity to study yoga therapy within this university environment that values rigorous inquiry, evidence-informed practices, and respect for the ancient wisdom traditions. Each of our courses at the University of Minnesota Bakken Center for Spirituality is designed to help you understand how yoga can influence your nervous system, support emotional regulation, and contribute to integrative health and well-being. Whether you're a healthcare provider seeking new tools, or a yoga teacher or yoga therapist who is expanding their practice, or a lifelong learner interested in the science of yoga practice, these classes provide a structured and supportive way to deepen your skills. We'll have one series on low back and hip pain, another one on upper back and neck pain, and a third one on insomnia and anxiety. We hope to see you over at the University of Minnesota. Your participation strengthens the growing community of professionals who are redefining what care can look like in modern healthcare and education. All right, let's get back to the episode. So when we look at the yamas and niyamas, these are like the 10 commandments of yoga, the yamas being our social disciplines. The niyamas being our personal disciplines, how we take care of ourselves. I think it's so interesting that how we connect with one another relationally is the first thing that Patanjali talks about. That if we want to regulate our internal state, it's going to be required of us to be able to do that in connection with other people. You know, it's kind of like a dance. Some days I'm really focused on my own internal state and my own self-care practices and how I can take care of myself and be with myself. And other times I'm needing to move out and be in a relational context with other people that I may or may not agree with or feel safe with. And so that's the dance, being able to go inside, get safe, come outside, and hopefully start to create safety in relationships. It takes two, you know, it takes both parties to try to create that. But the yamas and the niyamas are creating this foundational structure, saying that you're going to have to go out into the world and you're going to have to figure out a way to create internal conditions of safety and also to reduce the external threats and find safe relationships with outside of yourself. So that's really interesting. You know, these are like the ethics. And although I said it's not a hierarchy, you don't have to complete all the ethics before you start any of the other tools or the other limbs, we also can't forget the ethics. We can't forget how to be in relationship with one another and take care of one another and co-regulate together. All right, so that's the first and the second limb. The third limb is asana, which is our movement. This is about embodiment. This is about interoceptive awareness, how to sense and feel what's going on inside of us, everything from muscle tension to high blood pressure to your heart rate going up to your heart rate variability going down. We can all feel that, those sensations in our body, to can I actually feel my muscles contracting or do I just kind of feel numb in my body? So the postures are a way to help us build embodiment, but also to help us get stronger, more fit, more balanced, being able to balance, more flexible so that we can do our good work in the world and our body isn't hindering what we can offer to the world. So there is a very physical component, but remember, once you get into the circle with the eight doors, when you do asana or postures, now you are impacting your physiology, you're impacting your subtle anatomy, you're impacting your perception, you're impacting your confidence and how you communicate. That once you're in the circle, you're in it. It's not just asana equals physical embodiment. So much changes and happens once we become embodied and start to feel safe in our own body and start to be able to feel the shifts and the changes within our own body and physiology. All right, if we go to the fourth limb, and again, this is just a brief preview of the eight limbs. Every limb is going to have its own month this year. So we've got a lot to talk about in each one of these limbs and how they relate to nervous system regulation. But the next one is pranayama. Now we're at the fourth limb. We're going a little more subtle. We started gross. We're moving inward to the subtle. This is about observing your breath, feeling your breath, noticing the patterns of your breath. And then, of course, how do we create breath patterns that are more helpful, that give us energy, that help us calm down, that help us regulate, directly regulate our nervous system each and every day throughout the whole day? It's like a dial. The breath can dial you up and give you a little more energy. It can dial you down and soothe you and calm you. And so I believe the breath is the biggest way we can directly influence the nervous system if someone is ready for that. That's a big if, right? It doesn't work the same for everybody. So if someone is ready for it, the breath work, pranayama can be a really big way to help dial the nervous system up and down and create autonomic balance, more resilience also. If we go to the fifth limb, pratyahara, the way I was taught was that if we are doing the first four limbs well, pratyahara happens. It's an outcome. But I also think there is something to be said for pratyahara being created in things like yoga nidra, where we start to have more sensory regulation, where we can consciously bring our senses inward, kind of turning off the external world, shutting down the phone, focusing inward. I think it's an outcome, but I think it also can be done actively. At least that's been my experience with myself and my clients. So another big thing about pratyahara is boundary regulation, knowing when you have the bandwidth and energy to be out there in the world and when you really need to come home to self and when you need to communicate that, hey, today I don't have any extra energy. I don't think I'm going to be able to come over, or, you know, whatever it is for you. So when we think of having good boundaries in life, there is a component of pratyahara in checking in with ourselves to notice what we can and can't do, and if we're feeling overwhelmed or, you know, sensory overload. Also things like, I don't go to a lot of loud rock concerts because there's too many people, it's too loud, it's too crowded, my senses can't take it. So the only ones I will choose to go to is like an outdoor one where there's a big sky and you're sitting in a nice chair listening to Bob Dylan or something in the middle of the summer. You know, we have these choices about what we decide to put ourselves in and out of. So that could also be part of the sensory regulation and boundary restoration. As we get to the last three limbs of yoga, we can clump them all together and call them meditation, or another word that Patanjali uses is samyama. Samyama is the last three, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Dharana is basically being able to focus your attention and have concentration, which for a lot of us is really challenging to have that attentional stability. We've all had these conversations where our mind is jumping all over like a little monkey and we literally cannot focus on the person in front of us and have the conversation. So, you know, technically dharana, dhyana, samadhi are an internal experience, but I think for a lot of people, they have to draw the senses inward through pratyahara so that they can have that internal connection, attentional stability. So that's the first step. And that's probably where a lot of us are going to spend most of our time in meditation, is just building our confidence in being able to concentrate on whatever it is we're choosing to concentrate on. And then we go into something a little deeper, dhyana, which is about connecting with some chosen focus or object deeply and staying connected. Being able to be with yourself for a period of time, or be with your deity or your god or your lotus flower or your whatever it is, to really go deeply and spend time being imbued together, where the qualities of whatever it is you're focusing on really start to take hold and take root inside of you. An example of that might be Christ consciousness or Buddha nature or loving kindness meditation, right? Where you're really wanting to take on those qualities in a sustained and consistent way over time. So that's kind of the second step of meditation, or dhyanam. The last one, samadhi, I think some of us have had an experience or two. Like, it's not something you can try for it. It's, again, just happens, kind of an outcome of consistent practice. And this is more about total absorption, where the smaller you disappears into the larger consciousness. So I always say the asmita goes down, the I, me, my complex. I need safety. I want it my way. I own this. I possess this. I, me, mine. My house, my friends, my agenda, right? All of that ego identification, or asmita, that has actually served us well. It's how we survived, frankly. So, you know, we need that as humans, but there's a point where it kind of goes overboard and takes over our lives, and there's too much of it. And that's where we really start to suffer, back to the yamas, back to our social connection with people. So just to say that having these experiences of oneness are how we remember who we really are, beyond the self that is out here trying to survive, which is also needed, right? So we're talking about finding meaning within ourselves and our lives, very sustained regulation, because by this time you need to have a lifestyle that is sustaining your regulation, integration of the trauma that you've experienced and who you have been, who you are, who you will become. What is your life purpose? Why are you here? How can you be of service to this oneness while taking care of yourself? I mean, that's really the thing, right? The word samadhi is samadhi. Sama is like balanced. Dhi is my deeper internal self. So how can I stay balanced within myself to also give to the world and remember this oneness? Remember that it's not all I, me, mine. I need, I want, I possess, I have to have it my way. If you don't do it the way I want it, you're the bad guy, I'm the good guy. Like, all that ego identification can soften a little bit. We need some of it to survive as a human, but we don't need to let it lead our lives. So a few more things I just like to say about the eight limbs of yoga and nervous system regulation is that when we start with the yamas and the niyamas, they become the ethics of regulation. The yamas and the niyamas. How do we connect with other people? How do we take care of ourselves? These are nervous system supports. They aren't moral rules in this context, right? It's not like, oh, you're a bad person. You made a mistake. Now you're awful. You're immoral. No, it's more reframing how we relate to others and co-regulate, how we do self-care and take care of ourselves to support our own nervous system. Now, that may not have been explicitly stated by Patanjali in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, but I think if we looked at the entire picture of Indian philosophy, it's kind of assumed, right? That yes, it is more moral to be kind and compassionate. That's true. But also, we shouldn't define ourselves by our failures, and that we can use the 10 commandments of yoga to help give us feedback and to be gentle with ourselves and compassionate with ourselves. And that when we get feedback that things didn't go well, which we all will, we all have problems out there and in here, that this helps us have a little bit more ethical clarity and helps us refine ourselves and figure out how we want to do it differently next time. So that is important, because it's not that any of us is a moral failure. It's that it's a circle. It's a feedback loop that we're really talking about. Another thing I just want to start to wrap up with is that the eight limbs of yoga and using them to walk as different doors into this circle is that I'm talking about it as a therapeutic lens. Now, the eight limbs of yoga in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra was For Health, Healing, and Beyond. By the time you get to the fourth chapter, the third and the fourth chapter of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, you're really talking about enlightenment. I'm taking us all the way back to chapter two, where the eight limbs occur, and I'm framing the eight limbs for autonomic nervous system regulation through a therapeutic lens. And, you know, when we do that, we're not looking at yoga as exercise. We're not looking at yoga to make us more thin or lithe. We're not looking at yoga to be the cutest person in the room with the Lululemon pants. We're actually looking at it from a therapeutic standpoint where there's assessment, there's client-centered care, that we have trauma sensitivity, that we work within our scope of practice and within our ethics. And so, you know, the responsibility of all of us when yoga is applied to healthcare and education and community settings, it has to be a therapeutic lens, right? And that's different than how yoga was brought to the West. And I think a lot of us gloss over that, like, oh yeah, of course it's therapeutic. No, that's a big deal. That's the message we need to give to healthcare providers, integrative healthcare, allied healthcare. Hey, we are here to bring the therapeutic yoga and the yoga therapy into your healthcare setting, your education setting, and here's what we do. And so let us not just kind of gloss over that. Let's make that a central part of our message that we are looking at yoga and yoga therapy through this therapeutic lens, which is different than how most people view yoga. You hear people all the time say, I don't like yoga. I tried it once. And in their head, they're thinking of that class that was 90 minutes of torture, and they were asked to do headstand and triangle pose and wheel pose, right? That's not what we're doing here. So as we close up this first episode, I hope you feel as enthusiastic and energized as I do about what we're going to embark on in the next season or two for the whole year of 2026. I will be doing a lot of solo episodes. Some of you know that I have the good fortune of being the chair of the department at Notre Dame of Maryland University. We have a master's in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's certificate for people who already have a master's in therapeutic yoga. We also have an Ayurvedic certificate, but my weeks are full. I'm working a regular day job now as chair of that department, and therefore I don't have time to read every single person's book, figure out questions, interview them, and then edit, produce all of these episodes. So because this is such a specific topic that we're going to be going through, I will have some guests maybe once or twice a month, but a lot of these episodes are going to be solo teaching episodes by me. So I've heard from a lot of you that you really love my solo episodes. We're going to see how it goes. In full transparency, it's because I don't have as much time as I used to read everyone's books and to get them up to speed. That takes a whole lot of time each episode, and I'm trying to simplify and condense my own workload. I will bring in guests across disciplines that I think really will add to these topics, but do expect to hear a little bit more from me. And I'm also going to be storytelling and linking in yoga philosophy and real world examples and stories about how I've been able to use yoga and yoga therapy in this therapeutic context as this regulatory framework of the autonomic nervous system. Some of you know that I also work for Polyvagal Institute, featuring Stephen Porges and friends, and I'll be bringing a lot of what I'm learning from over there because I have the good fortune of taking their classes and kind of bringing that back over to this venue. And then, as I said earlier, we have this upcoming book, Marlisa Sullivan and I. We've turned it into the publisher, and we're hoping that it will be out late spring, early summer 2026. And so while the podcast is going to be kind of a living laboratory that we're going to be working together, I also hope that you can follow along once the book comes out and see where some of these ideas of using the eight limbs of yoga as a regulatory framework for regulating the autonomic nervous system, you're going to see our book laid out exactly in that structure. And this is going to help us show integrative health professionals how they can use not just yoga tips and tools, a little breath work, a little meditation, but how they can start to see the full picture of true yoga therapy and true therapeutic yoga, where we're using all the limbs complementary and walking into this circle with the eight doorways so that we can influence the system, body, mind, spirit, in a very, very positive and intentional and knowledgeable way. So I am so happy to be unveiling this with all of you. I hope you're excited about it. I hope you want to follow along. It's kind of be like lectures and mini lectures, and I think it's going to be a good season. I hope that you will gain something from it personally, but also professionally, because as I said, we all need to be regulated to do our best work in the world. But we also need to learn how to talk to integrative healthcare, allied healthcare, about what we do, why it's so important. And I'm hoping that in this next couple of seasons, the year of 2026, you will start be able to hear the podcast and read the book and start to kind of understand the language that will help you bring it into your healthcare setting, whether that's a pain clinic, whether that's a wellness center, whether that's your child's third grade classroom. When I say healthcare, I've got a very broad definition of healthcare, and that you'll have that simple language to explain to the people in front of you why this is important work and how it can benefit them. So I thank you for being here with me in this inaugural episode of season 10 leading into 2026. And you'll be hearing a lot more from me this year. And I'm wishing you well. Let's get this work done together. I'm really excited about our time together this year. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk soon. Thank you for being a listener of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We have done over 200 episodes, and we have had over 200,000 downloads. And we hope that in some small way, we have supported you mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. If you'd like to support the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast in 2026, there's several meaningful ways you can do so. First, you can become a member of our Patreon community and donate as little as $5 a month to keep the podcast going. Your contribution helps us to sustain the depth and quality of conversations on the podcast. A second option is that you become an Optimal State mobile app member for both Android and iPhone. Again, this is about $5 a month, and we're going to start providing a lot of amazing content on our mobile app in 2026. We'll definitely want you to be part of that community. We also have a book coming out called Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health. This book will be published by Routledge Publisher in spring 2026. It's written by Amy Wheeler and Marlisa Sullivan. We hope you'll consider purchasing this book when it comes out in the spring of 2026. Again, the name is Applications of Therapeutic Yoga in Integrative Health by Wheeler and Sullivan. For those of you who are seeking advanced training in therapeutic yoga or in yoga therapy, please consider checking out the programs at Notre Dame of Maryland School of Integrative Health. We have a MS in yoga therapy, and we also have a post-master's degree therapeutic yoga for licensed healthcare providers that's starting in the fall of 2026. In addition, we have a comprehensive Ayurveda certificate program also geared towards licensed healthcare providers. Each one of these programs is a pathway designed to support healthcare professionals and yoga teachers and yoga therapists who are ready to integrate these teachings into clinical, education, and community settings. All right, thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.